Welcome to KC by Sari, a podcast for Kansas City enthusiasts. I'll take you behind the scenes and you'll learn why this Midwestern gem is so special. In today's episode, I talked to Jake Eisenberg, broadcaster and play-by-play caller for the Kansas City Royals. One of Jake's most memorable play calls was Bobby Witt Jr.'s first career home run. With the Royals season underway, Jake shares how he prepares for games, what he loves most about being a broadcaster, and what he does during the offseason. When it comes to broadcasting, is that something that you always thought you wanted to get into? Is this like your dream job you've been working towards?
This is the dream job. This is the dream, but it wasn't always the dream. I mean, like any other kid, I grew up wanting to do maybe what my parents did and be a doctor of some kind, or, you know, be a firefighter or an astronaut or an architect or something like that. And it wasn't really until I got to high school that sports media was a thing that I've decided, like, okay, this might be worth something. And, you know, that's because I played Little League Baseball growing up, but, you know, wasn't good enough to play Major League Baseball. And so I was like, okay, how can I stay around this thing? And so I did some student media when I was in high school and then got to college at the University of Maryland and wanted to become a beat writer or television, you know, talking head sort of thing, just be around it. And kind of fell into play-by-play. I joined the student radio station. They gave me a radio show with my roommate 3 weeks into, you know, getting on campus. And so we had this forum to go on the air and mess around. And nobody was listening, but it was a great time. And we kind of found our voices along the way. And then I got the shot to do some play-by-play as a freshman at WMEC Sports and kind of started to realize, oh wow, this is the thing that I might have a future in. And that's not to say that I was immediately good at this. It's just the thing that I enjoyed doing and wanted to try and get better at. And that's where I found myself putting all of my energy. It was not so much toward being a newspaper beat reporter or a local news anchor or MMJ sort of thing. It was, I wanted to be a play-by-play broadcaster. And I kind of figured that out for sure right around, I would say, sophomore, junior year of college.
What do you think it was that really drew you in to begin with?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. I think one of them was, you know, I was growing up in New York and listening and watching Mets games or watching any other sporting event nationally. Like the moments that give you chills, the big moments in games that like raise the hair on your arms, that's in large part, in my opinion, not just the thing that happens, but also the way it's described and the way it's broadcast. And I think so many people will be able to tell you exactly what a broadcaster said at a certain moment for a certain play. And that's part of the fabric of that memory. And so I was immediately drawn to getting the chance to be a part of building that memory for somebody else. And at the same time, I was really excited to be a part of something that was happening in real time, to get to describe the thing as it was happening, as opposed to breaking it down after the fact or writing about it after the fact. My job was to talk about it in real time, in the present, and share it with people like I'd been sharing watching sports with my friends my entire life.
What was the training like for that, to be able to feel confident in what you're doing in calling the plays?
A lot of trial and error. No, it's you learn on the fly with play-by-play, much like anything else. And the key early on, I tell this to college students all the time, which is a weird sort of thing now that I'm now in a position to give advice, you know, even though I'm still kind of very early on in my career. But the advice that I give is you have to get reps. You have to go out there and you have to do it. And once you do it, you have to listen back to it. And once you listen back to it, you have to dissect it and digest it and figure out what sounds good, what doesn't, what you liked, what you didn't like. And that's true for you. But also you've got to send it to some other people whose opinion you respect or whose work you respect and who are willing to take a listen and give you feedback. And then you've got to put that all together. And the next time you get on the air, the next time you have a chance to get a rep, you've got to try and get a little bit better. So that's what it looks like over the course of a very, very long time for every sport that I've called: baseball, football, basketball, field hockey, volleyball. I mean, I did pretty much everything at the University of Maryland and have done a good amount over the course of my career too, even though baseball is absolutely the main focus and the one that I love the most and have the most experience doing. But the way that you get better at this is by doing it. And that starts at the very base level where, frankly, you have absolutely no idea what you're doing. And that was true for me. I showed up for my first game. I had done no preparation because I didn't know what kind of preparation I needed to do. I didn't know how to set up the equipment. And we were just sitting there talking and kind of figuring it out along the way. And then you start to learn, oh, these are the things that I should be doing or that I could be doing or ways that it could be better. And you start to build from there.
How did you find yourself in Kansas City? What was it that initially brought you here?
So I got a job with the Kansas City Royals to be one of their radio and television broadcasters, mostly on the radio, but I fill in on the TV side as well. And it's a dream job for me to have one of the very few play-by-play broadcasting jobs in Major League Baseball. Now, I grew up in Port Washington, New York, which is about 20-ish minutes by train to Shea Stadium, Citi Field, where the Mets play. And we used to take the train out to Mets games when I was growing up, and that was my first love. I went to college at the University of Maryland and started doing play-by-play there. And with the idea that Major League Baseball was my dream job, I jumped into minor league baseball, which is the most direct path or avenue that I knew about and could see for myself. And so I got a job with the Brooklyn Cyclones fresh out of college, which was a Mets affiliate. Then the next year I was with the Winston-Salem Dash, which was a White Sox affiliate in North Carolina. The next year I was with the Richmond Flying Squirrels, which is a Giants affiliate in Richmond, Virginia. Then come 2019, the end of 2019, I got a job with the Omaha Storm Chasers, which is the AAA affiliate of the Kansas City Royals. And you might remember, right around March of 2020, there was this really massive event that disrupted just about everything in the world. And because of the pandemic, the 2020 minor league season was canceled. And so I had to wait almost a year and a half to actually do the job in Omaha that I had earned. But finally in 2021, I got out to Omaha and did my first season of Storm Chasers games. And then in 2022, returned to Omaha as the broadcaster there, while also getting an opportunity to fill in at the big league level for the New York Mets and fill in on their radio broadcast. And so that was my first major league opportunity. 2022, I also filled in for a couple of games at Kauffman Stadium for the Royals broadcast, called Bobby Witt Jr.'s first career home run and MJ Melendez's major league debut. And those two games are really, really special. I got the chance to call them with Royals Hall of Famer Mike Sweeney, who's become a dear, dear friend. And then come 2023, or I guess the end of 2022, the Royals had an opening and I was lucky enough to be considered and then hired. And that's ultimately what brought this, you know, New Yorker to the Midwest, an area that I just adore. I adore Kansas City and the Midwest. It's a lifestyle that really suits us.
What are some other important memories that stick out to you as being a career high or something that you just really hold dear to your heart on something that you've called in a game?
Yeah, well, there's Bobby Witt Jr.'s first career home run, because even at that point, we knew what Bobby could potentially become. And now after signing the long-term extension that he did this past February, he is the face of the Royals franchise for years to come and has a chance to be, and this is lofty, understandably, and still early, but he has a chance to be a George Brett-like figure for the modern Kansas City Royals fan, where George played his entire career with the Royals and it was a Hall of Fame career, and his number 5 is up on the Royals Hall of Fame. And you know, Bobby has a chance that if everything goes the way it's been going, and yes, it's still early, but he could be the last Royals player to wear number 7, and he could have his number up there and be in the Hall of Fame someday, assuming he continues the superstar track that he's on. And so to be behind the mic for that moment in particular was really, really special, especially after welcoming Bobby to AAA with the Omaha Storm Chasers. There are so many Royals players that are playing for the Royals now that played for Omaha in the years prior when I was there as the broadcaster. So we've got this special connection where we were all together riding the bus to Des Moines or flying to Indianapolis in 2021 and 2022. So that's a special one that sticks out. And there's another Bobby Witt Jr. moment that sticks out. Probably the biggest swing of his career to date, his walk-off Grand Slam last July against the Twins. I was on TV for that game and had a chance to call that moment. And it's one of those moments, like we were talking about, that just gives you chills and raises the hair on your arms. And hopefully as a broadcaster, you just hope when those moments come that you can meet the moment and not do too much to put your own stamp on the moment. Cause it's not my moment as a broadcaster. It's Bobby's moment as a player. I'm trying to provide the caption to that moment. I'm trying to grab the emotion of that moment and convey that to everybody tuning in and listening so that when they remember it, it's part of that soundtrack and not something that distracts from the moment that was happening. But those are big league moments. You know, my first major league broadcast with the Mets was in Arizona against the Diamondbacks. And I remember getting lost in the ballpark, not knowing where I was, because these major league stadiums are so much bigger than the minor league ones that I was used to. I remember sitting next to Howie Rose, my idol and mentor growing up. He's a longtime Mets broadcaster, and just getting to soak in what it was like to sit next to him and call a game with him. But even off the air, I remember the long days in minor league baseball where it's a little bit rainy and you've got to run from the broadcast booth down to the field and pull tarp. Or the times that I dressed up as the mascot for some marketing thing that we had to do, because in minor league baseball, you wear a lot of hats and there are, quote, other duties as assigned in your job description. It can run the gamut from pulling tarp to being a mascot to broadcasting to media relations, you name it. I've done it. And so all of these things kind of coalesce into just a really nice memory bank that I have from my career.
Speaking of having to wear many hats, what are some challenges that you faced in broadcasting?
Sure. Well, I think it's the fact that in minor league baseball, you do wear a lot of hats. And because of that, the hats that you wear that aren't play-by-play broadcasting related can take you away from preparing for the broadcast or advancing your broadcast, listening back to it. And you know, there's a lot of time that you put into media relations and marketing and sales and being a mascot sometimes and pulling tarp and XYZ. And these things are all vital for a minor league operation. I'm not downplaying them in the slightest. Like, it's important that I was there and other broadcasters in minor league baseball are there to be in these roles when need be. But it does take away from our ability to improve as play-by-play broadcasters or from our ability to focus solely on being a play-by-play broadcaster. And because of that, it can be harder to kind of get off the ground a little bit and really improve. And there are some days where you show up and it's a 14-hour day and you've slept 2 hours the night before and you're just getting back from a long road trip and you don't have as much energy or you don't have as much time as you'd like to really sink your teeth into that night's broadcast. And so it can be easy to, you know, players will say all the time that they don't want to give up an at bat. It can be easy sometimes in the minors to, dare I say, give up an at-bat or give up an inning. And the key, I think, for me and for a lot of other broadcasters in the minors was to really rally against that, to never give up an inning and to always, always be as sharp as you can, as prepared as you can, no matter what other stuff you have going around. But the fact that you have to do so many things in so many different places in a short amount of time with not a ton of resources, that definitely puts a strain on you.
You mentioned just having to always be on. What do you do to really take time for yourself so that you always are feeling them as prepared as you can and well-rested and ready to go for the next game? Because there's a lot of games in baseball. It's a long season. So what do you do to be able to help take care of yourself?
Yeah, 162 games, and that doesn't include spring training, and that doesn't include, fingers crossed, postseason games. I'm still figuring out. This is year two for me with the Royals, and I guess year two and a half if you include the games that I did with the Mets. But I'm still trying to figure out what my routine is and what my balance is. And one of the things I figured out last year in terms of making sure that I take time for myself and kind of have this mental charge is that I really like to get to the ballpark, whether we're at home at Kauffman Stadium or on the road. I like to get to the ballpark a little bit earlier than I guess your average broadcaster. I like to get to the ballpark at a time where the ballpark is still quiet. They haven't turned on the music yet. Nobody's hitting batting practice yet. Not too many people are there quite yet, because I like to have about 45 minutes to an hour to just sit and read a handful of articles or write down some notes or learn a story that I might want to share or better understand a statistic that I want to try and educate our listenership with, but do that in an environment that doesn't have kind of chaos swirling around it. Because once the day starts at the ballpark, once we go down to the clubhouse to talk to players and hear from manager Matt Cutrera or any other people that we might want to talk to, all bets are off. You never know where you're going to do, who you're going to talk to, what's going to happen or how much time you're going to have before you get on the air. And so for me, getting the ballpark just that much earlier, having that dedicated hour of kind of zen for whatever it is I want it to be. Sometimes it's just taking a lap around the ballpark to remind myself, wow, like I'm at a major league ballpark. Like, this gets to be my office today. And when we go to a new ballpark, it's soaking up the things that make that ballpark unique. But taking that time is really important for me. And so that's something that I figured out. I really love having part of my routine.
What are some of your professional goals? What's like a dream game for you to broadcast and call?
I mean, the dream game is the World Series. You know, everybody grows up wanting to be the guy at the plate with the bases loaded, 3-2 count, two outs, down by three, and you hit a walk-off grand slam to win the World Series. We've all been that kid in the backyard. And I was that kid too. But now for me, I want to be the broadcaster for that moment. And look, the World Series doesn't need to go seven games. It can be a four-game sweep. But the World Series is the pinnacle. The goal job-wise is the one that I have. This is a dream come true. If you had asked me, you know, 5 years ago where I wanted to be in 5 years, I would have said here. I don't know that I would have believed that that was actually possible. And the fact that it's happened as quickly as it has is still kind of astounding to me. But as far as aspirations in this space, it's calling a World Series win and being able to call the final out or the final moment of that World Series and be a part, you know, like we've been talking about, be a part of that memory for so many people.
Like so many, you know, big pop culture moments that you remember where you were when certain things happen. I think the same goes for a lot of people with sports. You remember where you were, who you were watching with, the moment when a big play happens and that awesome win happens and you get it. And it's just so exciting. And I think that's why sports are so special to so many people.
Yeah. I mean, sports, I think if you want to really dissect humanity for a second, I think sports allow us as humans to form incredibly strong communities with people that we might not otherwise be connected to. You know, for however long in human history, our communities were the people that lived nearest to us or only believed the same things that we did or were from the same place that we were from. And sports has a way of connecting people that don't necessarily have those things in common and bringing us all together, whether it's at Kauffman Stadium or at Arrowhead or over at the new Kern Stadium, which I still have to get to. I've heard it's amazing. I haven't had a chance to go to a match yet. But wherever you go, you're coming together with other people that are finding joy in the same thing that you're finding joy in. And I think that's a really special part about sports.
Originally from the East Coast, now in Kansas City, do you feel like you fully ingrained yourself in all Kansas City sports, or are there some other teams that you still root for pretty heavily?
You know, as far as the Midwest goes, I mean, I lived in Omaha for 2 years, so that was my first taste of the Midwest, and I got a taste of the, you know, Nebraska Cornhusker, you know, I'll call it a cult up there, and going to the University of Maryland, a Big Ten school, I stayed away from rooting for Big Red. I do have a bit of a soft spot for Creighton. I worked for them for a little bit, calling some of their games, so it's always nice to see them do well. Obviously, I cheer for, you know, the Terps at the University of Maryland, but other than that, yeah, I grew up a Mets fan, but I'm a Royals fan now, and it is fun when the Royals play the Mets because there's a lot of family and friends that I'll get texts from and hear from about those games. But, you know, growing up, I didn't really have a huge allegiance to any other team other than the Mets. And so upon moving to Omaha and now living here, very easy to adopt the Chiefs and jump on the bandwagon there. And thankfully, I feel as though I've been accepted by Chiefs Kingdom. And I hope that's the case because, look, I've got a Chiefs sweatshirt. I've got a Chiefs hat. I was going crazy watching the Super Bowl. And look, I'm going to put this out there. I moved to Kansas City in January of 2023. The Chiefs are 2-0 in Super Bowls since I moved to Kansas City. I'm not saying those two things are related, but they're not related. So yeah, I'm proud to be a part of Chiefs Kingdom.
Fingers crossed. Continue to be our good luck charm.
Yeah, let's go for 3 in a row.
Yeah. In the off season, when work is aside, what does life in Kansas City look like for you? You are a newlywed, which congrats, by the way, recently
Thank
married.
You.
So what do you and your wife do in Kansas City?
Yeah, I think we're both still figuring that out because we moved here again in January of 2023, and then the season started, and the season doesn't always leave a ton of room for exploration or date nights or things like that. And then this past off season was so heavily focused on our wedding and getting married. We got married in January of this year, and you know we're thriving, I would say, in married life. We love it so far, but we love finding new coffee shops in Kansas City. We love going for walks down in the plaza, which is the area that we live, finding a new park to go for a walk in, finding a new restaurant to go out and try. And we've tried a bunch of the ones in the plaza. We've tried some in Westport and Brookside, and we've gone down to Overland Park or Olathe for a couple of different spots out there. So we're still figuring out exactly what our spots are, what our routines are. But I will say that on any given day in the morning, whether it's during the season or during the off season, If I'm somewhere outside of our apartment, it's probably a coffee shop. And I think I spent probably the most time at the roastery location in Brookside this past off season. It's a really nice vibe, good ambience, good coffee, good people. That's an area that's one that I gravitated towards, but I'm open to trying pretty much any coffee shop that I can find. And that's what I like to do on the road too. When we travel with the Royals and we go to all these different cities, is instead of going to your Starbucks or whatever, I'll find the local coffee shop of that city. And I'll try and sit down and get some work done and enjoy a cup of coffee there.
Coffee shops is one of the easiest ways to explore a city. And Dan and I talk about it a lot. Dan as well, being from the East Coast, being a Philly guy, and me being from here, it's sort of fun being with someone who allows me to feel like a tourist in my own city, because growing up here, I felt very much in a bubble and sort of, I knew the places I knew. And ever since we've been together, it's been fun to go and explore and always trying to find new places to go. I mean, it's one of the things that we enjoy doing the most together, but it's sort of fun to feel like a tourist in your own city, because you get to explore, you get to find these new places, find maybe a new favorite. So it's always fun to come across a new place that you haven't known before.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And I would say that's exactly how we feel. It's though we're tourists in our own city. And Jen's got a list on her phone of different restaurants that we want to try and different coffee shops we want to try and different places that we want to go and different things that we want to do. And so when there's an off day during the season or a little moment of downtime, or certainly once we get to the next off season, we'll start checking those things off the list one by one and really getting to know the place where we live.
Any new businesses recently that you've tried that have really stuck out to you?
I don't know about any new super recently, but I guess it depends on your definition of recently. I can just tell you the ones that I've tried over the course of the little over a year that we've lived here. I mean, coffee shop wise, Roastery is great. Messenger Coffee, I've enjoyed. Oddly Correct over on Truce is a really good one too. Sway Coffee, which is right around the corner from Joe's, I think it's on 43rd. I've really enjoyed going over there too. And those are kind of just the ones that are in my vicinity and in my orbit. And there's certainly so many others in the Plaza area in Westport and Brookside that I haven't had the chance to try yet. But those are the ones that kind of stick out in my head. Obviously, we've done our own little barbecue tour of Kansas City. We've gone to Joe's and Jack Stack and Gates and Arthur Bryant's and Q39. And they're all phenomenal. Still need to get to Slaps, which I've heard is great, and LC's, which frankly, I've been delinquent. It's right next to the ballpark. I pass it literally every day, and I just haven't had the chance to go in there and try it. So I've got to do that. That's very high on my list, a barbecue place to try. We've tried to find, you know, some go-to Italian spots or sushi spots. We love going over to Lulu's, the location over in Westwood. That's definitely a go-to of ours. We've tried Minsky's Pizza. Everything is new, so it's just a really long list, and I don't want to leave anyone out, because everywhere we've tried, we've really enjoyed. Brookside Sushi is a place that we've gone to a number of times. That's like a really nice neighborhood vibe in there too. And so look, anybody who's tuning in, I'm open to recommendations. And I know that there are a ton that you have, but I'm open to recommendations from everybody. Send us to the places that you love. I'll give you one caveat. I have celiac, so I'm looking for gluten-free spots primarily. So if you're going to recommend a local bakery, recommend that to Jen. Not really my speed, but that's okay.
I think we could be here for a very long time with me giving you recs. Heirloom across the street from Brookside Sushi.
Yes, I've heard of Heirloom.
Their food is so phenomenal, but their gluten-free option is a really delicious carrot muffin. Billy's Grocery as well is
I don't know how I forgot Billy's Grocery. We've gone there so many times. We love Billy's Grocery. That's just a great spot. And then we've gone to Homegrown a bunch. Now I'm starting to remember some
right,
other places.
It's all coming back.
Banksia over at South Plaza is a really good breakfast spot that we've tried. The best gluten-free bakery, like pure gluten-free bakery that I've found so far is Morgana's over in Raytown. Sometimes I'll swing by there on my way to the ballpark. As much as I love them and love what they do, I was also trying to be a little bit more svelte for wedding day. And so I had to steer myself away from their location just a few more times than I would have liked to. But look, now that we're past the wedding, now that I got this ring on my finger, I'll go there every other day if I can.
What is a fun fact about yourself that you would want to share?
And I can tell you a little bit about myself off the air and away from baseball generally. Obviously, I love coffee. I guess this one's more related to baseball, but if you follow me on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, you'll probably see me share some pictures of ice cream in helmet cups. That is my go-to ballpark food. It always has been. It always will be. That's the thing that I used to get when I was a kid going to Mets games. And that would be like a seventh inning treat where we'd run up to the stand and you get ice cream in a helmet cup and then you keep the little helmet cup and you wear it home. And I used to have them in my bedroom as a kid. And so when I get the chance now at the ballparks that we go to, that's the snack that I gravitate toward because it has that pure joy of being a kid at the ballpark again. But I also, I believe this scientifically too, that ice cream does taste better in a helmet cup. And so if you're looking for me at the ballpark, not in the booth, you can probably find me at one of the ice cream stands getting some ice cream in a helmet cup. Another thing that I've tried to curtail over the years, but definitely have more of, and that's okay too. So that's, I guess, a quirky food habit of mine, if you will.
Are you still keeping the helmets as little like memorabilia from the stadiums that you are traveling
I've only
to?
I've only kept helmets from the teams that I've worked for. So I have one from each of the four minor league teams that I've worked for. I have one for each of the two major league teams that I've worked for. And then I have one very special ice cream helmet from our wedding. We had custom ice cream helmets made with a little monogram logo that was part of a Sunday dessert bar. So I have one of those too. That's definitely the most special of the bunch. So I don't know if that's funny or quirky or juxtaposed or whatever, but it's certainly something a little bit different. And then, I don't know. I mean, I love playing tennis. I play tennis over at, in Overland Park and try to get out there as much as I can. Which is a little bit different. You don't always see an overlap between baseball and tennis, but that's something that I really enjoy and wish I played some more of. I haven't played pickleball yet here. I've heard chicken and pickle is a great time. Haven't had a chance to do it yet. I'm all for it. Any kind of racket sport, I'm game. So that's on my list of things to do as well.
So obviously we are in the start of Royal season. What sort of things are you doing right now to help prepare for the games? Obviously, looking at the schedule, are you having to do a lot of homework on the teams? How much is going into the prep?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of prep that's done during spring training, talking to players, getting to know them a little bit better if I haven't met them before, learning their stories, learning what they did in the offseason to try and improve. That goes for the coaching staff, too. It goes for the front office and what the Royals are trying to do. And it goes for the 29 other teams in baseball, because when the Royals take the field tonight or tomorrow, there's not just one team on the field, there are two. And in order to properly tell the story of tonight's game or tomorrow's game, I've got to be able to talk about both teams on the field, all the players that are involved in XYZ, and also the rest of Major League Baseball. I think the best way to think about the kind of preparation that I do on a day in, day out basis is that every game, every broadcast is kind of like an open book test where I've got all of these notes on all of these players down on my score sheet in front of me that I've prepared the morning before the game, or sometimes the day before the game, or, you know, leading up to the game. Sometimes I'll be scribbling something in my scorebook right before we go on the air for the pregame show, or sometimes even during the pregame show. And sometimes all the stuff that I write down, you'll never hear. Same with an open book test where you have your cheat sheet. Sometimes you don't need it because you know the answer to the test already. Sometimes it's not as related to the test as you thought it might be. And so what I love about baseball is that there's a lot of space for stories that you can tell or different things that you can have fun with. And sometimes there's an opportunity to tell a story or educate somebody with something you prepared. And that's always exciting, but also the game will tell you what's interesting in that moment at that time. So for instance, you know, the Royals play the White Sox. They opened up their series against the White Sox the other night. And as a pitching staff, the Royals had only induced one double play the entire season until Seth Lugo took the mound against the White Sox. And he turns three double plays in a three inning span. And all of a sudden, Denny Matthews, Hall of Famer, eternal voice of the Royals, turns and asks me what I think the Royals' single game record for double plays is. And I have absolutely no idea. But of course he does. He's seen every single game. He's been there since 1969. And I just throw out a guess and I go, I don't know, six. And Denny's like, you're right. And then it turns into the two of us pulling out our media guide that the Royals do a great job putting together, leafing through it and ruffling the pages and finding, okay, page 261. Oh, it's in the bottom right-hand corner. Most double plays turned into single game. It was six, and it's happened twice. And all of a sudden, we're talking about those two games, and Denny is sharing his memories from that game. And I'm just sitting there listening, soaking it in, while also talking about the action. That's not something that I can prepare for whatsoever. That's something that happens in the moment that we're just going with. And no matter what I have on my scorecard, it doesn't matter anymore, because we're now talking about the game that's happening and all these other things that kind of meld with the game that's happening. And so I can do as much prep as I want, but I'm also sitting next to an encyclopedia of Royals baseball and Denny Matthews. And so in terms of the prep I do, it's like an open book test, but sometimes you throw the book out the window and you just watch the game and you talk about it and you have a good time, and you hope the people that are tuning in are having a good time too.
And there's something to be said about being so passionate, having such passion for what you're doing. You often hear this sort of cheesy saying of like, when you love work, it doesn't feel like work at all. I don't know if I quite necessarily fully believe in that. However, I do think that there is something to when you are having to prepare for work, or you're having to work really hard towards a certain project or something. When you enjoy what you're doing and you have a passion for it, it doesn't feel like homework, or it doesn't feel like you're putting in all this extra work, quote unquote, but you're just like, you're learning more facts to be able to use for later, to have that knowledge just for yourself in the case that it comes up. You can't predict the future, you know, with play-by-play calls. You really don't know what's going to happen, and you can only prepare so much. But being able to just have that wealth of knowledge for yourself to be able to pull from the back of your brain to use in any scenario is good to have. And I'm sure doesn't necessarily feel like homework per se, because, you know, you're just preparing for the job that you love and that you're excited to get to be part of.
Yeah, exactly. And the stuff that I might not have had the chance to use last night, or that didn't make sense to use last night, I might be able to use tonight, or I might be able to use 2 weeks from now or a month from now. So a lot of the stuff that we prepare does have an evergreen nature to it. And as long as it's interesting and relevant, it's something that I'd love to share when the game allows for that. But the baseline, the foundation of it, is we are describing the action for people that aren't able to see it for themselves, whether they're at the ballpark or driving around their cars in Kansas City or mowing the lawn or doing laundry or whatever. We want to be the conduit to the game, and we want to describe the action. We want to entertain you. We want to educate you. We want you to come along on the radio ride with us so that we can all share this thing that we love and do it together.
Plug all the stuff, share where people can tune in to hear you with your play-by-play calls, where people can follow you on social media, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere that is relevant to being a broadcaster.
Sure. So if you're in Kansas City, our flagship radio station is 610 Sports Radio. If you're not in Kansas City, there's a very wide Royals radio network market. I think it's something like 54 affiliates across four different states, I want to say. And if you go on royals.com, you can find the map of all affiliates and figure out which one is closest to you in Missouri or Kansas or Nebraska, or I think even down to Oklahoma. I think our network extends to. So that's the radio. And of course, you can listen online on the MLB app. I think MLB audio is one of the best kept secrets that there is in baseball in terms of tuning in. It's $30 for the entire year. You get every single team's radio broadcast for every single game, no blackouts whatsoever. That includes ours. So no matter where you are in Kansas City, somewhere else, even abroad, you can tune into any game on the MLB app. That's on the radio side. And then on the television side, we're on Bally Sports Kansas City. There is the Bally Sports Plus app that you can download and have a subscription there. There's also MLB.tv. Blackout restrictions do unfortunately apply for that. And hopefully eventually we'll get to a point where that's not the case anymore, but that is the case now. So hopefully you can come join us on Bally Sports Kansas City or on the radio, whichever one makes the most sense for you. As far as I go, you can find me on Twitter. It's at Jake Eisenberg with a little underscore at the end. EISENBERG. So there are three E's in there. And it's the same handle for Instagram and Threads and whatever other platform you want to try and find me on. I try to keep the handle the same to make it as easy as possible. But I love sharing different pictures from the ballparks that we go to, what the booth looks like, what the dugout looks like, sunset looks like at some of the ballparks we go to, the ice cream helmets, I'll share, you know, some statistics before the games. I'll share some of the clips from the radio broadcast in case you missed them. So come hang out online, so to speak, and then maybe we'll get a chance to meet each other, as they say, IRL in real life. So at Jake Eisenberg _ is where you can find me.
So I'm looking forward to another Royal season and wish you the best of luck. And I'll be excited to tune in and hear you play call the games.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun. It's been great getting to know you and Dan, and best of luck in the final sprint of wedding planning and an early mazel tov to you both.
Be sure to tune in to Jake during the Royal season and follow along on social media. Casey by Sari will be back next week as we try coffee made for special events. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss it. For more Casey content, follow me on Instagram at Casey by Sari. See you next week.
Casey by Sari.